All right, great to have you back with us on this Memorial Day weekend. Hope you're being safe and taking care of yourself, but still enjoying life the best you can. Safe distance, masks, and just respect everybody's space. I think that's the best thing I could tell everyone. Georgie Brothers, of course, those stressless chairs are absolutely, I kid you not, they're the best chairs. It's the best chair I've ever had in my life. So Georgie Brothers, a better place to buy furniture. Absolutely check them out online. We appreciate everything that they do for us. Joining us now and for his weekly segment, and that is Mark Simon. Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter from Sports Info Solutions. Mark, how are you?
I'm good. I'm hanging in here. Watching some people watch baseball tonight as they're rebroadcasting Game 6 of the 1986 World Series with all of the different Met players talking about it at different points. Kind of, I guess, the beauty of Zoom technology allowing everyone to chime in while they're watching at home.
You know, I always recommend people following you on Twitter, and it became part of your name, Mark A. Simon Says. But you did have a tweet today. I thought that was interesting. A straight steal of home by Tommy Agee. How about that?
Yeah.
That must have been exciting.
How about that? 50 years ago this July. So it's an extraordinarily rare play for a player to steal home to win a game, like a walk-off steal of home. The last one in the regular season was actually the one against the Giants in 1982.
The Cardinals,
Glenn Brummer,
right?
Against Gary Lavelle.
Yep.
But before that, 1970, there's a Mets one, Tommy Agee against the Dodgers. And I have the audio clip, so I thought I would share it with the folks out on Twitter. And I have been, over the last few days, I have been trying to digitize my audio collection, which is a rather massive undertaking that will probably take years. But I've put some of the good stuff up right away and making it accessible to people online.
Oh, it's fun on Twitter. I want to go back to that Giant one for a second, and I spoke over you for a second. Who was it that did the steal of home?
Oh, it was Glenn Brummer, the backup catcher for the Cardinals that year. And Gary Lavelle was the pitcher. And I think that the Giants' argument was that the pitch was strike three. And
exactly.
That it should have been called strike three.
Exactly.
And I've seen, they've shown the clip on like MLB Network a few times. I think it's part of like a commercial. And it's a crazy play that the backup catcher would steal home. It's like the lone thing that he did to contribute to that championship team that year, but it is, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, Frank Robinson, and I'm so glad you brought it up because it came back to me in a second. Frank Robinson went crazy. The pitch was right down the middle pretty much, and I said to myself, well, that's strike three, and then all of a sudden the guy steals home, and and the Giants lose on a walk-off. Very good. Well, that was interesting, and as I say, Mark always comes up with good stuff on Twitter. We had the birthday of Brooks Robinson this week, a wonderful Hall of Famer. So many people love Brooks Robinson. The vacuum cleaner, the great glove, was he better than Greg Nettles? Was he better than Schmidt? Can you tell us anything about Brooks Robinson?
I think it's fair to say he was better than them all. He was the gold standard. I wrote an article where I tried to look up like what other people said about him. And even like when he first came up as like an 18-year-old, they were talking that he was going to be this unbelievable player so long as he could hit. And it took him a couple of years, but then he became a legitimate hitter in the major leagues. He won, I think it's the 16 gold gloves at third base. But the thing that I remember about him and that I think stands out to a lot of people is that he is regarded as one of the nicest people in the Baseball Hall of Fame. I went and got his autograph when I was maybe 11 or 12 at a baseball card show, wearing a Mets shirt, I should point out. And he hated having lost the 69 Mets. That was something that really stung for him. I've heard people tell stories about how upset he gets about that. But he stopped the line. He was like, I got to take a picture with this kid. And he could not have been nicer. He was fantastic. And I've heard many, 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 many stories like that about him. He's still alive. They surprised him for his birthday. They had a bunch of Orioles get together on Zoom talking about his career.
Oh, wonderful. And all true. I was at Cooperstown for the Bill King induction into the Broadcasters Wing, the Fort C. Frick Award. And I got to be in the Otisaga Hotel for breakfast and lunch, and I was there, and there was Brooks, and he was one of my favorite players of all time, number five. And I got to sit down with him and talk with him, and then Frank Robinson came up, and we talked about Frank Robinson hitting the ball out of Memorial Stadium, off of, I think, maybe even Louis Tiant. I forget who he hit it off of. But Brooks couldn't have been better. And I have wonderful pictures with him, so good. I'm glad that that you could mention him. I was asked this week about overlooked Hall of Famers, and I came up with Gil Hodges, Minnie Minoso, and Louis Tiant. I posed that question to you, and you have some from your childhood that you feel are worthy of the Hall of Fame. Then when you speak, I listen, because you have a lot of information. No, you do. You have some good backup on your opinion. So let's hear what you think.
All right, so let's start with Dale Murphy, who was the first player that I saw go from being like a good player to being a superstar. And he won the MVP in 1982 and 1983. From 82 to 87, he was one of the best players in baseball. Six-year period. Essentially, like, if his career had ended in a really kind of sad, unfortunate way, like 88, 89, somewhere in there, he's probably in the Hall of Fame. But his crater, like his decline, was so bad that like it makes his stats look so much worse when for this six-year period, he was like a megastar. He wasn't Trout, but he was an outstanding player. He was a guy that could hit for power, that could steal bases, that could field. He was a star for those Braves teams that you got to see on TBS all the time. Then I've got Keith Hernandez, best defensive first baseman ever. Key hit in two different Game 7s of the World Series, an amazing performer in what we would call high-leverage situations. Nobody likes the game-winning RBI anymore. I still like the game-winning RBI. He was the king of the game-winning RBI, and most of those were legit, like 7th, 8th, 9th innings. He was the guy who got the big hits at the end of games. Then this is one that is constantly drummed into me by the Tigers fan contingent that I know, and having worked with Kirk Gibson a little bit, Lou Whitaker. If you're going to induct Trammell, Lou Whitaker is basically a clone of Trammell at second base at a position where there weren't great offensive numbers. He was an outstanding defensive player, won multiple gold gloves, put up the numbers every year. The thing that hurts him is he wasn't a super-duper star. Like, he doesn't have any seasons where he was among the 8 or 10 best offensive players in the game. But he was consistent every year. He's one of the two or three best second basemen every year, year after year, dozen years in a row. So he comes up a little short in some people's eyes, but I would say he's a worthy candidate. And then Dwight Evans, who I think would be in now if he played now, like if he put up the numbers that he put up now, 380 home runs and like a 380 on base percentage, people would have been all over that because on base percentage stuff. Plus, I'm convinced he would have been really good in defensive run save because he could throw and he could catch the ball. And he was an outstanding defensive outfielder. I think he would have been liked the way that people seem to like Larry Walker the last couple of years, and he got in.
Hmm. Mark Simon with us. Mark A. Simon says on Twitter, well, we'll catch up with that list in 5 or 7, 8 years and see how many have made it. Then I'm sure you're right. I'm sure some will be in there. On my list, Gil Hodges. When he retired, he was one of the outstanding right-handed power hitters of all time. Great first baseman, of course, on the Brooklyn Dodgers, and had a second career as a manager of the Senators and the Mets. But for Gil Hodges in the 50s, and I realize the numbers are a little skewed, the smaller stadiums, but it was, Ralph Kiner and Gil Hodges. That was about it.
Yep.
And when he retired, he was the leading right-handed home run hitter. So for me, Gil absolutely should be in. Minnie Minoso was the Jackie Robinson of the American League, an African-American, not African-American, but an African-Cuban. And he got up to the big leagues in the early 50s and was an impact player right up until about 1960. But triples, home runs, not great power, but stole bases. He was the catalyst in the American League. You had Mantle, and you had Minnie Minoso. And then Louis Tiant, for me, is still one of the best big-game pitchers I've ever seen. And I realize 220 wins in his era, that's not enough. But when you look at the body of work and what he accomplished, so I put Louis T on, and those are my three.
Yeah, I think those are all pretty worthy guys. For Gil Hodges, one thing that I think people overlook, and you mentioned, like, he has these really good offensive numbers. In the two World Series that the Dodgers won, he played very well. Like, his numbers for those two World Series were very good. So I would put some stock in that. He also was good in the 56 World Series, with which the Dodgers lost in seven. Everyone remembers the World Series. We were at, like, 0-22.
Yes,
he was a good World Series hitter, too. Vinny Minoso had 9 years where he was, like, on average at an all-star level. He was top five at MVP five times. He's another guy. If he was playing now, maybe the appreciation level is even higher. He had the on-base percentage. He could run. He won 3 gold gloves. His DRS probably would have been pretty decent. And he was a 9-time all-star. He's certainly a very worthy candidate. Louis Tion is, of the three, is kind of the lowest of the three. I know you're putting a lot of stock in the 75 World Series, because I think we've talked about that before. His comps, like, if you did statistical comparisons, are Catfish Hunter and Jim Bunning. And those two guys are in. So if you'd like to make the case that, oh, this guy's in, he should be in, then that's your argument with Tion. He does come up a little short in some areas. As you mentioned, mm-hmm. 220 wins is a little low. He probably needed a World Series championship to vault him over the top.
Yeah, for the eye test, just watch him. You knew he was a Hall of Famer. He was just different. He was different. So, all right, a good argument. We'll see in the next 10 years of our list who gets in. I think we got a shot at all of them getting in at some point. So if they could ever get it all straightened out again, who knows where we're heading anyway. I don't know if you had a chance to look at this or give an opinion on, I was asked this question this week, better ball player Frank Robinson or Ricky Henderson? I don't know if you have an opinion on that.
That's a really hard one. Like, if you put the numbers side by side, they're completely different players, obviously. It's actually funny. When you take, like, wins above replacement and the more modern stuff, they're almost right next to each other. So I don't know that that's necessarily a question that can be answered. The thing that amazed me about looking at Frank's numbers today is the guy never had a bad season. Even like 68, when the numbers are when the offensive numbers in the game came down, like, his OBP and slugging is still really good. And also, people forget he had over 200 stolen bases, so it wasn't like he was slow. And then everyone knows about the 580 plus home runs. So he's right there with Ricky. Ricky's completely different, obviously, but. Yeah, that's such a hard question. They're completely different eras and completely different players. I'd say they're right adjacent to each other.
Yeah, my answer is, if you needed to drive in the winning run, Frank Robinson. If you needed to score the winning run, Ricky Henderson. That's why I looked at it. And I'll give you one last one, and we appreciate you being on. I know you've got a lot to watch tonight. Better defender, Ricky Henderson or Barry Bonds? Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, so Barry sometimes... probably not in San Francisco, but I think on a more global scale, Barry gets knocked sometimes for the one play when Francisco Cabrera got the hit, that he didn't listen and he wasn't playing in the right spot to field it and make the throw home. But Barry was really good defensively, going back on the ball. I can remember when the Pirates and the Mets had their rivalry in the late 80s and early 90s. He was outstanding defensively. So my memories tend to skew to that. Ricky Henderson was a good defender, but you couldn't necessarily seemingly always count on Ricky to be playing his best baseball on that particular day, particularly as his career went along. And I think Barry maintained it better over the course of his career. So I would lean Barry Bonds on that one.
Okay, very good. Boy, great stuff as always. Always a pleasure. And I know you're still doing the podcast during the week as well. So Mark A. Simon says on Twitter, and of course, Mark, part of Sports Info Solutions. So stay safe and have a good week. And absolutely look forward to talking to you next week.
Yep, you got it.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Mark. All right. More coming up. KNBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.